Karen Bobka, financial consultant at Holborn Assets. She's also got her blog. We're going to be sharing some articles on the blog today when it comes to the latest with UK state pensions. There's changes happening there. We're also going to get into more detail about having a will here in the UAE. So do you have a will? If not, why not? Have you thought about it? What's putting you off getting a will? Let us know your thoughts with your questions for Karen today. Good morning to you, Karen.
Good morning.
Good to have you back in the chair.
Thank you. It's been a while.
It does feel like that, doesn't it? Also alongside us today, producing the show this week, we've got Hanan Marafi. Hello, Hanan. How are you?
Hi there. Good, thank you.
Good. So do you have a will, Hanan?
I currently don't. I got married last year, so I did have a will, but now it's invalid, so it's actually something on my list, something of concern.
So you, how long have you been living in the UAE?
So I've been here 8 years.
All right.
Previously I was in the UK, where I do have a UK will.
Okay, and so interesting there then. Change of circumstances, you've now got an invalid will, as in invalid in the UK or here or both?
Well, from what I understand is it becomes invalid because I got married. But then obviously it's a little bit more tricky here. I'm actually a Muslim, and so here you can't have a will from what I know, so it's a bit complicated.
There are options. I think you could be a great case study for us today, actually, to explain what the choices and options are. So there are options.
We need to catch up about UK state pensions. Shall we do that first, Karen?
I think we should, because I don't want to labour too much on a UK thing. But this is also relevant to anyone of any nationality who has lived and worked in the UK. And I certainly meet a lot of people who kind of bounce around different countries and have spent time there paying into the system. So it's not wholly Brit-centric. This is a change that was touted, oh gosh, some time ago now, but came into effect last month, which is to do with you know, when you can receive your pension and how many years you need to have paid into the UK system. It used to be that any payments you've made, even for you know a couple of years, would entitle you to the basic state pension, but that has changed. Everyone needs to now have had 10 years worth of contributions to take anything out at state retirement age, and that's the big difference.
We're all sitting there counting up now, 10 years.
Exactly.
It needs to be 10 years. Interesting. Okay, but you can top up.
You can. There's various options there. There's a couple of things here that we need to consider. Is that the state pension ages have been changing, and the announcement of these changes, off the top of my head, came in something like 24, 25 years ago. So that old thing of pension ages at 60 and 65, that's kind of gone for many of us now. And so we're looking at our mid-late 60s. And again, all this information is available on the UK government website, which is very, very good, I hasten to add, on this sort of topic. So you have to, first of all, check what age are you entitled. For many of us, we can probably do a rough calculation in our heads as to how many years we've got in the system, but that doesn't tell us what our entitlement is. But there is a very easy way of finding out.
Excellent. So we can go online, we can source it via your blog as well.
Yeah, I've put a link on there that takes you directly to the form that you need to complete, which is called a BR19. And if you even just go to Google or your favourite search engine and put in BR19, it will take you straight to the form. What you do is complete some basic details, including your UK national insurance number, send that off, sit back and wait for a few months, because I think there's a bit of a backlog, and then you will get a letter coming through to you telling you exactly how many years you've had in the system, and in monetary terms what you are currently entitled to at your state retirement age and what that age is.
I've got a question. So as a freelancer, I didn't have a pension as such, but I was paying national insurance. Does that mean I'd also be eligible to get a state pension?
Yeah, anyone that has paid national insurance has basically built up an entitlement to the UK basic state pension. So you will have an entitlement in there.
That's, I suppose, it. Yeah, it's good news. It's good news for those that are freelancing or self-employed or wherever you've been paying national insurance into that UK system. But does it count if you're an expatriate, if you haven't lived there for some years?
Oh, totally. You don't lose your entitlement. Again, the guideline of the 10 years applies. And I come across many people, you know, like ourselves, have been here 10 years or whatever, but still worked in the UK for a number of years and are still entitled to receive that at the state pension age. So it's worth doing. In that, there's, again, when you retire, it doesn't matter where you're living. If you have that entitlement, it can be paid to you. But what you also have to consider is how it will be paid to you. It depends where you're living as to whether the amount that you receive is indexed in payment, i.e. it goes up each year roughly in line with inflation, or whether it's a flat amount. And the ballpark answer is, if you're in under current rules, and obviously with what's going on in the UK, that may change slightly.
Well, with Brexit.
It might. We don't know. We don't know at this stage. But generally, if you're in the European Economic Area, so that's a fairly broad area across Europe, or a few other places that have what's called a reciprocal arrangement, I think Canada's one of those, the amount will be indexed in payment. Whereas if you were to retire here, say, or Australia, where there's been court cases about this, the amount that you receive will be flat. And that's that. So in real terms, it's going to diminish over time.
Karen Bobka, financial consultant with Holborn Assets, along with Dubai Today producer this week, Hanan Marafi. And we're looking at the UK state pension, some updates there. And you've got a question, Hanan, on this.
Yeah, I have. Do you think it's actually worth having?
Absolutely, I do. It's money. Who doesn't want extra money in retirement?
No matter how small it is.
Oh, or how large it is. I think people might be pleasantly surprised when they find out what they've built up. And without going into great detail, because this gets complicated, and I didn't do this in the blog article, in addition to the basic state pension, there is a secondary level, a thing called the second state pension. It used to be called SERPs, for those of us of a certain age might remember it. And if you're an employee paying national insurance, you were also building up entitlement to the second amount of payment as well. But the basic state pension itself, if you have full entitlement, which is now 35 years worth of contributions, that's worth pointing out, that has gone up from 30, that's 35 years, is currently £155 per week. So that's a fair amount of money. Now, it's not going to be enough for most people in retirement on its own, but to have that on top of other provision is going to make the difference. That could be the difference between running a car, having annual holidays, just, you know, not having to live off cans of beans or something in retirement. That's what we're talking about here, and extra, and why not have the extra as much as you can.
Yeah, for sure. So interesting indeed. Someone's asking, a little off topic, but Karen's here, so any questions to do with finance, personal finance. And it's an interesting question, actually, from a British citizen, Susan. Can I open a UK bank account if I don't own property there? I'm looking to buy a house in the UK and want to take advantage of the weak sterling. Any advice?
Right, a couple of things here. If you are not UK resident, it's very hard to open a standard UK bank account, because they're asking for proof of address, and then they'll ask if you're resident, and they'll sort of contradict each other. So that's hard to do. But you don't have to have a UK bank account specifically in order to purchase a property. Certainly if you're looking to apply for a mortgage, the lender will, if you don't already have an account, will generally assist you with doing that, or have an offshore account. And you can certainly also open an offshore bank account in sterling with a debit card, where you can set up standing orders and direct debits to run alongside that. So although it's hard to do a bank account in the UK itself, I set up offshore accounts for people that will do the similar job for them on a regular basis.
It never crossed my mind to close my bank account in the UK, and it makes me wonder, do you have your bank account still in the UK?
Yeah, definitely. I think it's really important, actually. I do use it quite a lot, and even when I'm doing online shopping, I would use my UK account, although maybe it's better to use your Dubai account.
Well, right now, yes, that's something else, isn't it? But yeah, I think it's surprising the number of people that have shut accounts when they've left, and I suspect that a lot of that was people who were perhaps in their 20s or a bit younger when they left, that had no real financial ties, no mortgage, nothing really ongoing, and just shut the account down, not realising the complications in opening one up if you're not resident.
Mm, okay, well, I'll ask you then. It's interesting. I'd love to know, wherever you're from in the world, do you still have your bank account in your home country? Do you still have a bank account in your home country? Let me know. And also, when it comes, therefore, to closing a bank account here in the UAE, so could we leave the UAE, you know, all above board, you know, the job finishes, you close down on your rent, etc., move to another country, but keep a bank account open in the UAE?
Yes, it is entirely possible. You're not going to have the credit facilities or anything with loans that go with it, but it is possible with many banks to keep a very basic account running. But the couple of things you need to think about is, first of all, are there any charges for running that account? And also, generally, if there's no activity on account for a period of 6 months here, it will be made dormant, and you'll have to jump through a whole bunch of hoops to open it up again.
Interesting. So even without an address here, you could still keep the account?
You can. It is possible, yes.
All right. Well, let me know if you've still got your bank account open in your home country, wherever you're from. I'd love to hear about that. Interesting area. Hadn't considered it before. Lots of people texting in about wills and how to have a will here in the UAE. So we'll get to that in a few moments. But just to give a little bit more on UK state pensions, check out Karen's blog online, Financial UAE, and we've posted it up on our website as well for people to connect with you, financialuae.com, and check in. Of course, she's a regular contributor weekly, so with her column on your side with the national newspaper. It's really worth, I'm going to go and do it, going to check out the form online and just to put in the details and see what we might be eligible for when it comes to our UK state pension.
I think most people will be pleasantly surprised. It's actually more than many people are expecting.
Fantastic. So there you go. Let's take a look then at wills in the UAE, Karen, and why do we need one?
Right, the topic that no one wants to talk about. Right, we're going to make you this morning. If you have assets, if you have children, you need to have a will. That's a fact. Now, how you should do it and where you should do it, that's where the complications potentially arise. And indeed, not everyone necessarily requires a UAE will, even if you're resident here. It very much depends on your personal situation. There's not a one-size-fits-all answer on this, which is why I always want to sit down with people personally and to work out what's going to work for them. And it could well be that what you actually require is a will in your home country. And because if you don't have property here, if you only just have a simple bank account and very few assets, here is not your issue in terms of the distribution of assets and inheritance tax and death taxes or whatever they happen to be in a home country. So it depends on the circumstances, but if you have assets and children, you should have a will. And it surprises me, and I probably shouldn't be surprised by now, but it does, the amount of people with children that have not made provision for them in the unfortunate and appalling situation that both parents should die.
Preparing for the worst, planning for the worst is what we're talking about.
Yes.
Yeah. Hanan, there's some developments, isn't there, when it comes, and I know, Karen, you wanted to talk about this as well.
Yes, yeah, so real estate owners in Dubai can now protect their assets by creating an online property will. Dubai's DIFC Wills and Probate Registry has launched an online facility for eligible resident and non-resident property owners so they can pass on their assets. So there's an online template that they'll be able to complete. The formalities of registration will remain the same as for all other forms of will that are registrable at the Wills and Probate Registry. And the cost of a single property will is 7,500 dirhams.
Come back and talk about that in a moment. Stay with us. It makes her month when I play that, when she comes into the studio.
It does. I love it.
Good to have you here, Karen, as always. Do take advantage. She's here for the next 25 minutes or so, taking your questions. Now, do you really need one? It may depend. And if you do really need one, then how do you go about getting the correct will in place? Planning for the worst is what we're talking about. Also joining me alongside is Dubai Today producer this week, which is Hanan Marafi. Good to have you here, Hanan, and sharing your story a little bit today, because you don't have a will currently. You're Muslim, grown up in the UK, here for 8 years. You got married a year ago, and when you got married, that's when you realised that the will was no longer valid, I suppose.
Yes, that's right. So I had a will in the UK, and I'm very conscious that obviously I need to remake my will, because I was told it becomes invalid. It is a bit more complicated, obviously, because I am Muslim, but I feel because we're between the two countries, it just is one of those things I keep putting off, and it's literally been on my to-do list for the last year.
It's not the most exciting thing for people to sort out. I accept that. I accept it's not a jolly topic and people don't want to face it. But my argument on all these things is get it done, get it over and done with, tick the box, and then you can just get on with the nice things in life. So in your situation, without, you know, disclosing too much of your circumstances, do you own property here?
Yes.
You do. Okay, well, that complicates it slightly. But you have a number of options. In your case, you probably want a UK will for many assets, and maybe to look at a Sharia compliant will for you here as well, although there are limitations. But there are steps you can take to protect your assets in terms of having life policies that pay out offshore, that will, you know, replace assets that you may not be able to to access. Everyone's circumstances is a little bit different, so it depends what you actually want. Now, just to pick up on that term, Sharia compliant will, that is something that only applies to Muslims. If you are non-Muslim, you cannot have a Sharia compliant will. And I've seen it mentioned so many times, nonsense, it does not exist for you. Sharia law is the law of the land of the UAE, and it will apply to all assets in this country, no matter your nationality or religion. But your options regarding wills are different on what you can and can't do. But for the majority of people that I meet, a home country will is what is the priority for them. Because for most of us, our assets are out of the UAE for various reasons. We've got property in home countries because many of us are planning to return there. And we have bank accounts offshore because that's the smart thing for many of us to do. So it's a home country will that's actually required. But the situation there becomes slightly complicated when there are our children, something that I think is particularly important to talk about because that should be your priority.
So Leanne texts in to say, do I need a UAE will if I have no UAE assets, but I do have children?
I would say no, you don't. I don't think it's necessary to go down that route. Providing your current will reflects your wishes, and that will have made provision for your children as well in terms of permanent guardians. You don't need a new will for the UAE. However, depending on the age of the children, what she may want to consider is this thing called a letter of wishes for an interim guardian. And that's a document that I think is worth having for younger children, not necessarily if they're older, because the permanent guardians in the vast majority of cases are going to be in your home country. So that awful worst case scenario when both parents have died and the question is what then happens to the children, the permanent guardians or other family members are going to take a little bit of time to get here, and then it's a question of the authorities what to do with them. Now, let's make it very clear. The UAE authorities do not want to take away your children. I've seen scaremongering about that. They really don't. Your children may be lovely, but they don't want them. But if they don't know what to do, there is the possibility that children could be put in a hospital or an orphanage or just in care temporarily. Now, if parents have died, it's a terrible, terrible traumatic time for children. And if you've taken steps to ensure that they can stay in your home and with people that you know, that's the kinder course of action. So this letter of wishes names temporary guardians. And what that means is that in the event of the parent's death, these people will step in loco parentis, in the place of parents, using the Latin term, and will look after them for a few days until the permanent guardians and family can get on a plane and get here. And it means those permanent guardians can take a day or so to get themselves sorted before coming here. It makes it less traumatic, and it's a fairly simple document that is written in English and Arabic. You keep it on your fridge. You make sure that all your friends and your immediate circle know who that would be. So it's one of those things, a belt and braces approach to kind of ease the pain a little bit in a horrible situation.
Actually, this person's come back. Is it right? I'm just trying to decipher the message because of the typing, but that you have to pay for that. That's that letter, that document.
Have to? Well, I think it's wise to do it properly because it matters. So I think it's wise to do it properly, to have it drawn up in both languages, a document written by a lawyer to do it.
Interesting. So Taru's saying, my will is prepared in India. What attestations are required here as I own properties here in the UAE?
Right. OK. If you own property here, then it's probably wise to have a separate local will, and you can do that. And then you can go. You've got a couple of options there, and it depends on his religion as to what he can and can't do. Let's assume that he isn't Muslim. OK. And this applies to anyone who isn't Muslim that owns property here. You've got two options. You can draw up a local will, and you can have that legally translated and attested and lodged with the courts. Or you can go down this DIFC route that Hanan mentioned. Now, I am not a big fan of the new offering that they've come out with, which is purely about property and it doesn't apply to any other assets or children or bank accounts.
Just give us that again quickly, Hanan, what the DIFC situation is when it comes to wills.
Yes, so real estate owners can now protect their assets by creating an online property will. It's Dubai's DIFC Wills and Probate Registry who has launched an online facility, and you'll be eligible as a resident and non-resident property owner, enabling you to pass on your assets.
Right. So it's only what you're saying.
It's only property.
And it's only protecting your property.
It doesn't apply to other assets that you may have here, bank accounts, businesses, and does not cover children. So that's for a very limited demographic. Now, the alternative is the option that the DIFC launched, I think, in May of last year, which allows for you to write a will and to have it lodged at the DIFC. And this is the only way that someone can fully bypass Sharia law. And that's what it was intended to do, for people who are not Muslim, who don't want Sharia law to apply, to have a different legal system applying. Now, the way that you, for most people are going to have to write a new will to do that, because they do not accept any amendments. So you've got the cost of a will, and then you can lodge the will there. And the costs are expensive. It costs over and above your standard will costs 10,000 dirhams for an individual, or 15,000 dirhams for a couple, to lodge the will at the DIFC. Now, that is a lot of money. However, that's worth doing, in my opinion, if you've got a property here that's worth several million dirhams. You have to look at that trade-off there as well, because it is the only absolute guarantee that you're going to have. And it is designed to operate like a kind of a Western legal system, if you know what I mean by that.
But you don't have to go down that route.
You don't have to. You're not obliged to. You're not obliged to do anything, really. But it's the only way of absolutely fully protecting and knowing that the property and other assets, in the event of your death, will be distributed absolutely in accordance with your will.
So if you don't, just to clarify, if you don't have a will, you don't have a will in your UK, in your home country, wherever you're from, you don't have a will full stop, what's the situation if you were to die?
Well, you've got no say in what happens to your assets. It's as simple as that. And, you know, we spend years of our life, and I spend years of my life, telling people to build up assets and savings. And if you've not made a will, then assets will be distributed in accordance with the law of either your home country or where the assets are. And it depends on where you're from, etc., as to how that actually works. And in many cases, a spouse is not the automatic beneficiary, and certainly not the automatic beneficiary for all of it.
That's the thing to consider. If it's your spouse that passes away, you know, bank accounts, things like that, they just get frozen, right?
They do here. They do here. And it can take years for accounts to be unfrozen. Now, even with wills, it is complicated here in terms of the unfreezing of accounts. And that's why I think that couples should always have separate accounts. Keep a lot of money offshore so you don't come across that issue in the event of a death of a spouse, because I'm sure we've all read about circumstances. Invariably, it's the man that dies and the woman is left literally bereft. And it's a horrible, horrible situation. It's bad enough that you lose a loved one, but then to be put in a situation where you don't have access to funds, you don't know what there is, you don't know when things are going to be distributed, it makes a horrible situation a lot more complicated.
Do you have a will? How was it for you lodging that or getting that prepared here in the UAE or back in home country? And when it comes to being, if you're a Muslim, so in Hanan's case, there are options, of course.
Yes.
It can be complex. Someone texted in earlier saying that, you know, as a Muslim, you can have a will, but it's about the distribution. So, for example, you can have a will, but the Sharia law allows a will of up to one third of one's assets or belongings.
That's right. So you have, you know, free choice on that part of it. I understand, and I don't claim to be any expert on Sharia wills, but I understand that there is also, in many cases, the provision for the Hiba gifts. So you can make other gifts in there as well.
When we come back, we'll dig deeper into having a will in the UAE and also taking questions on any issues when it comes to your personal finances with Karen Bobka. Stay with us. Just being honest with you, Karen, I'm sure you get this all the time.
Yeah, okay, let's make it quite clear. If you come and talk to me about a will, I will talk to you about how to protect your family, how to sort out the will, all the different options. I may be telling you that you need to sort out an offshore account. I may be telling you that you need to look at life cover for your family, because that matters. I am not going to start flogging you some terrible long-term savings plan at the same time. Okay, that's a promise.
Thank you. Very good indeed.
Okay, so we've just had a call in from Jenny. She'd like to know how can she obtain the letter of wishes and how much will it cost?
Okay, come and have a chat with me and we can get it sorted. I mean, I'll come to the cost in one second. The whole reason that I've got this arrangement with a firm of local lawyers now is to try and take away the pain, because I'm aware that a lot of people don't want to face up to this. They're a bit intimidated maybe by sitting down with a lawyer and being bombarded with legalese and all sorts. So I will sit down with people, explain their options, we'll chat over tea, coffee, whatever your preference, and biscuits if needs be, to go through what's the right thing for you to do. And then the choices are yours to follow that through. So I will answer all the questions. I will guide you with the right way to do things. I will deal with the questionnaires. In most cases, you'll never even need to meet the lawyer, because although the wills are written by them and the advice comes from them as to what you need to do, I'm here to kind of make the process a little bit easier. And this is a way that we've also managed to keep the cost down, because I'm aware it can become expensive. Now, costs, obviously, that this is relevant here. The actual cost is going to vary depending on specific circumstances. If you are from the UK or a Commonwealth country, and this is where, you know, days of British Empire, slight benefit for many people here, you're talking at a starting cost of 3,000 dirhams for the wills for couples. If you're arranging a letter of wishes at the same time as the will, there is no additional cost. If, however, that's a standalone document, you've already got a will that covers all your wishes, and I'm more than happy to sit down with someone to look at that and tell them if it's the right thing, and if it is, I will tell them that, you're talking around 1,500 to do the proper letter of wishes that's in two languages and we know is going to be accepted by the authorities here.
Lots of people texting in, still confused about it. What do we do? How do we do it? For example, here, one person saying, this might be a silly question, but what if one spouse dies? If the partner has access to their bank account and goes online and transfers the money, the funds, to their own account, let's say the same day when the death occurs, would this be a fraudulent action?
Are we talking about an account in joint names? If it's in joint names, then
I'm assuming so. I'm assuming as, or maybe not. Maybe it's not joint, but you've got the bank details because you're the husband or wife.
Yes, apparently that does happen, doesn't it? If it's in joint names, it's your money and you're free to access it. If it's in someone's name and you just happen to know how to access their account, you're not supposed to do that. Also, and I've said this before, if you think your bank here is inefficient, no, they're not. When someone dies, they freeze accounts very, very fast. What you also have to consider in that situation is if one partner has died, perhaps it was in a car accident, perhaps the spouse was injured and is not in a position to do that. Maybe their husband has died and they're not quite thinking straight. It may, you know, accessing your bank account may be not be the first thing that you think about in that situation, which is why it's wise to have, you know, all your ducks in a row and everything in place so you're not disadvantaged should that actually happen.
So how do we do it then? Give us the, again, you know, you've explained there the cost. You can do it through somebody like yourself. Mm-hmm. You could do it yourself if you wanted to.
Theoretically, you can. Living here and with the complications, I would advise against that. In certain home countries, yes, you can do what's called a DIY will if your situation is simple. But, you know, the theory being that lawyers spend as much time sorting out badly written wills as dealing with the right one. So I think it's worth spending a little bit of money to get things done properly, particularly when you have children. Now, you can go to a lawyer directly and find out what you need to do. There are also people like me who are trying to facilitate this process to make it easier to talk about it. But the thing is to talk about it and start doing something about it, because I know it's really easy to go, I must get around to it. And we're all very good about that with legal issues, financial issues, medical issues. But really, you know, focus up, get it done. It is the right and fair thing to do when you have family, because anyone that's ever dealt with the estate of someone that's died that doesn't have a will knows how complicated, and it takes an awful long time sometimes as well.
Also, I was going to ask if, for example, I'm married but I don't have children. If I were to have children, would I need to change my will?
Probably, yes. Or it's a depend. Sometimes you can just do a codicil or an addendum to a will in certain countries to make changes there. But often having children is a good time for people to reassess their total financial situation. On marriage, on having children, at retirement, those are probably the three main points when people want to review their whole situation and how they set things up.
So just to be clear again, just to go over it again, and remember, if you've just tuned in and thinking, oh my goodness, you can pick up the podcast later today. Just go to our website, dubaii1038.com. All the podcasts are there. It's up on our Dubai Today page as well. So by 2 o'clock this afternoon, if not sooner, you'll be able to hear this show again if you need to. So again, Raj is saying, just to be clear about what happens without a UAE will, who gets what under Sharia law? If distribution to, say, children and parents and spouse and siblings, then is that a major issue if you are a close family, a close-knit family?
Not necessarily. If you're absolutely confident that your family will pass things on as you wish, then fair enough. However, the cynic in me kind of says people can change a little bit when money's involved, and it's complicated. It's hard to get around it here, but there are steps you can take to simplify the situation in the event of death. And at the same time as doing a will, a good thing to do, and I think we should all do this on an annual basis, is to have some sort of schedule that lists all our bank accounts and all our assets. Keep that with a will, update it regularly, make sure that your close family are aware of where you have accounts and pensions and savings plans, etc., so they can access those things as well. And all this is about being kind and fair and making life easier for those that are left behind.
You can find out more, check into Karen's blog, her website, financialuae.com, and we post it up on our blog post today as well. Coming back on pensions, somebody's saying here, great discussion. I left the UK in 2007 and at that point had a Prudential personal pension plan paid into equally by myself and an employer for about a year. I haven't touched it since or had any contact with the PRU. Does it still exist and how do I claim or transfer the money to my UAE account if so?
Right, two things. Yes, it will exist. And you just simply have to contact the insurance company and ask for details of that. But no, you can't just take the money out. That's not possible. You cannot access any UK personal pension, that's what we're talking about here, until age 55. So, and there are restrictions on how you can take money. In fact, under new rules, in theory, it's possible to cash out, and with that amount, they may be able to do that. But there could be tax implications. So it's a case of knowing exactly what they've got and how much and what their choices are.
But it still exists.
Of course, it exists. Yes, go and ask the Prudential for a statement, and they'll probably just want your date of birth and national insurance number if you don't still have the policy number. And that should be relatively straightforward.
Karen Bodker, thank you very much for your time today.
My pleasure. Thank you.
And remember, you can connect with Karen online via her blog, via our website as well.